Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the War Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
Hello, hello. Why not break down the March video games, eh?
Hell yeah, man. You know, it was a really good February.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if it was going to start getting a little bit empty in the calendar, but March is, for me at least, shaping up to be pretty good.
The release of something like the Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection is already the thing that's drawing my eye, but we're going to run these things down in order. The first thing that is of note comes on March 5th. That's the Outlast Trials.
Yeah.
Soft reboot, I guess, of the Outlast series?
A weird old project. This thing has been in PC early access for, I think, a year, and it's finally getting its proper official 1.0 launch, now on consoles as well. And this is like a multiplayer spin-off of the regular Outlast, and I'm not really investigating the reception to it, but it seems a little bit weird for that franchise, because I'm a big fan of Outlast 1 and even 2. I know that game got a lot of criticism way back when, but I thought it ruled. I think the setting is incredible, really atmospheric. So to then pivot what has been a historical single-player franchise into the multiplayer space, doing this kind of strange multiplayer story where it apparently unfolds the more you play and the more you upgrade your character and stuff, it's just, it's not one I really necessarily want to spend too much time on. It's one I'm intrigued by, but it's a strange pivot for the franchise.
Yeah, it's worth just mentioning that Outlast was such a big deal back in 2014, then the sequel is kind of overlooked, even though like it's absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the most terrifying atmospheric horrors around, and this is a little bit of a pivot for the series. Next thing down is on March 8th, WWE 2K24. Well, it was just a little, you're gonna buy it.
I'm not gonna. Well, here's the thing, Scott Tillman. Let me talk to you about my recent run-in.
I think we're all in a bit of a thing.
Wrestling. Yeah. I think wrestling is in the news at this moment in time. You know,
who does people think is gonna win, Cody or Roman Reigns?
Exactly. Right. I've never watched. Actually, that's a lie. I've watched Roman Reigns wrestle, but before he rebooted his character and turned heel and had his big comeback and became this tribal chief character. And I've never seen Cody Rhodes wrestle, neither in WWE or AEW. So explain to me why I care so much about this storyline, why I was watching the WWE live stream that they did for the WrestleMania press event for whatever reason. And I don't think it's just because we're in a wrestling office where the boys talk about it all the time downstairs, because that's been the case for 7 years. There's something about the storyline that's ongoing, and more importantly, to me anyway, the backstage politicking from The Rock returning and the potential story changes by the board members and what's going on with the business. Like, that's always been a, like, how wrestling is produced has always been way more fascinating to me personally than the actual wrestling itself. So I've not really even watched many in-ring performances over the past 2 decades. That said, I will play the WWE game because I love in-ring performances in video games. If we go back to, you know, SmackDown, Here Comes the Pain, Shut Your Mouth, SmackDown versus Raw, like, I loved those games growing up, and I've always wanted to get back in, and I've always wondered, when's the time, right?
The last two games have been great.
That's it. Yeah. 2K23 was really well-received, as far as I'm aware. That's currently, or it was, in the PlayStation sale. I almost bought that, but I thought, you know what? Maybe I'll wait till a new game comes out figure out what that's about.
The whole thing, everyone can let us know what they think down in the comments. comments below whether you've been drawn back into wrestling because of how big this story is. I think The Rock did turn a lot of eyeballs. Obviously, there's all the stuff with Vince McMahon. All the stuff in regards to how the company's being run, the changeover, the buyout with TKO. Like, there's a lot of things going on over there. And I think that's made people go, like, I used to love wrestling back in the day. Oh, The Rock's doing a thing again. I'll see what he's doing. And the idea of Roman Reigns' title reign coming to an end after like 1,300 days or something. And the fact that you had Cody fought him last year.
Yeah.
And lost in a really cheap, stupid way. I think a lot of factors have come together to make people go, like, I am curious about said big sports event.
Yes.
It reminds me of when Conor McGregor fought Mayweather. Yeah. And even if you weren't necessarily like a boxer or a UFC person, you knew about it. You knew it was coming up. And WWE go hard on their marketing as well. Like, the average person has heard of John Cena, Roman Reigns. They kind of know these people. Which is all to say that the game at the heart of it on the cover for this thing is Finish the Story, which is Cody's whole thing about getting a title, which you can argue is kind of giving away the fact that he's going to win. But he does need to win.
Well, that's why, again, not to turn this into just a wrestling podcast.
Please subscribe to the wrestling podcast.
Please do. That all of them have talked about before. But that's another reason I was fascinated by the game, right? Because like you said, you know, it was Cody Rhodes is on the cover. It's him finishing the story, while at the same time, you had the threat of that being derailed in the actual show itself by the politicking and The Rock coming back. So it's like, this has the potential to be a mess. And that's fascinating, man. Like, what if they diverge? Like, what does that mean for the brand as a whole? But yeah, I mean, I know you're big into AEW, right?
And all the way.
It just feels like with that kind of competition now, obviously there is that humongous Vince McMahon lawsuit going on, which definitely sours the waters, understandably. But with him removed from it, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, when it comes to the game, I'm intrigued by what's going on with that company and its many branches, including the product and including the game. And it's like, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Is it going to be a WWE 2K22 situation? Or is it going to be... That was a bad 21, one, right?
21, because they took a couple of years off. Right. 2K20, they took a little while off, and then they came back. And since then, they've been on fire. They were spacing the releases out, but now we're back to one a year.
Yeah.
And so far, the thing is as well with these games, it's worth saying that they, 2K, shut the Creative Suite servers off after a year, or they did for the 2K22, because I just download these games and fill them full of AEW wrestlers, which I know is blasphemous to the WWE fans, but I wanted somewhere to play AEW games, and it ain't Fight Forever. That game's terrible. So still, they kind of make you buy the most recent one by shutting off the creative suite of the previous game, which is why I eventually had to pick up 2K23, and I'll probably end up having to get this if they or when they shut off 2K23 servers.
Well, yeah, I mean, bringing it like back to the video game industry rather than the wrestling industry side of it, I'm intrigued by this game and other sports games at this moment in time, because I think we're at like a really interesting intersection where competition is finally arriving. You know, we've got the AEW game. It might not be amazing, but that competition now exists, and that will now go toe-to-toe with the 2K series. It was recently announced, I think, or at least it was rumored, that FIFA have courted 2K to make an official FIFA game. Obviously, EA relinquished that license. That's now just known as EA FC going forward. So for the first time in what feels like forever, FIFA will have competition, not just from other, you know, developers like PES, but in an official capacity as well. Someone who can go toe-to-toe with licenses, so you're not playing as London Blues, you're playing as Chelsea, you know? And that's, it's an interesting thing to be, because will these companies step up their game? Will 2K24 be a copied and pasted game, or will, with AEW in mind, will they be trying to strive for more and not get back to the complacency that they were in with 2K21.
That's the thing, and it's also not to spend too much longer on like a sports game, a wrestling game. But if you remember that, I mean, obviously we grew up across the rollout of the SmackDown games, like there was the Raw series on Xbox, you had the WrestleMania series on GameCube. Like every year when a new one dropped, it was like, okay, what have they improved? Can you smash the tables better? Are the physics better? Now that they've got all that stuff nailed down, it is more incremental almost by default, because you're only really forking out for either the servers to stay online or just for whatever incremental roster upgrades there are. In this case, Cody being added as a founder of AEW, now over on WWE. So like, it is interesting that, like, to me, it's a great wrestling game now. Like it's one of the best that they've ever had. And I love doing matches on that. They walk a really good line between putting a show on for the crowd crowd, but also everything lands really well and really meaty. The animations are really good. And there's a lot of momentum. Like, you can kick out last minute or whatever. Like, they do a lot of things in there that let you think like a wrestler would in the ring.
Right,
and
yeah.
I think that's fun. With the kayfabe side of, I am actually trying to kill this guy or whatever it is. Yeah. And I think they do that stuff really well. Next one down is March 14th, Star Wars Battlefront, the Classic Collection.
Come on, you need to talk to me about this. Because
have you seen the trailer for it?
I have, but I need to make a confession to everyone here right now. I was never a Battlefront guy.
No way.
Those games kind of passed me by. Really? I played them very casually at friends, but I was always more into the single player Star Wars games, perhaps because I never had online, and it was fun playing with bots on Battlefront. But what's getting me into this is the idea of, you know, 64-player online battles. That sounds cool. And that was what got me interested, rather than the games themselves just being remastered.
Right.
But you were, I assume, big into Battlefront.
Bouncing off the walls, I was. I love the idea of taking old games that you don't need to worry about the graphical fidelity side of it. You can just put all of the hardware juice into the netcode side of it. I assume this thing will play like a dream. It'll play like how a lot of us envisioned a bigger version of Battlefront playing before EA took over. And I hope, on a wider sense, I hope that this is a way of getting the actual Battlefront 3 re-greenlit, because there was a Battlefront 3 in production that would let you go from being on the foot battles to jumping into an X-Wing, going into space. Like, there was some footage that did leak towards the end of the 2000s of what Battlefront 3 was going to be before the changeover, and EA did their little run, which ended horribly with Battlefront 2, even though they did save it eventually. I love the idea of taking old games and making them run better than ever. You know, the online multiplayer for the Jedi Knight games is brilliant, and it always was. That's back online now. And it's good to have those experiences. Old school Battlefront was always, like, notably chaotic, and at the time, it felt great. I don't know how the third-person shooting is going to feel now. We're talking about something from, like, 2005-ish. But it represented one of those first times that so many people played online in those massive spaces. And I think that'll still be fun. I think if the netcode holds up and everyone can get stuck in and it all just plays well, I think it'll be how your brain imagines those games, which is what the best remasters always do.
You know, we're going to do a whole podcast on remasters, which you should check out on the What Culture Gaming podcast. It should be going up next week.
Yep.
So I won't reveal too much, but I think Star Wars in particular have been doing an exceptional job with their remasters. Like, so many games from their back catalog that you might have thought you would never see again are up running better than ever, like you said, with the bonus of servers being turned on in some cases. I was just looking at the remaster for Star Wars Dark Forces, which alongside, you know, like the Jedi Knight games, the fact that you have that history there is incredible. Like, imagine if we got that for superhero games that are now out of commission, you know, that now, you know, Spider-Man Web of Shadows.
I was just going to say Web of Shadows.
Cost you £85 to buy it second hand in the UK. Like, imagine if they were more readily available. Mm. And like you said, the best versions of them or how you imagined them looking and playing way back when. I just think they've done a really good job with them while keeping them reasonably priced. I think the Battlefront collection is £25, which is exactly what Tomb Raider was as well. And that's a cracking price point, I think, to not overcharge and kind of respect the audience in that way, because you're getting these classic games and you're not getting the rock star treatment of charging you £50 for Red Dead Redemption remastered, which is essentially just a port.
No, I think as well, like, if the market is primed for anything, thanks to Helldivers 2, it's another mass online multiplayer experience that is based around large scale battles. Like, everyone's going to want to dive in. Some of the best memories, or the only good memories of EA's first Battlefront were Walker Assault, before we realized how horrifically unbalanced it was.
Yeah.
But that first time you all beam in and just have a Star Wars with a lot of different people. We'll see how it goes down. I feel like the Star Wars IP is critically wounded at the minute, but the game side of it was always so much stronger.
That's it. Like, the games, I agree. You know, Star Wars interest generally kind of maybe waning, but in the game space, I think there's a real desire there.
Yeah.
There's a real audience there that is clearly embracing both the new games, like Jedi Survivor, and then the older games and the remasters like this.
Next one down is March 18th. Hi-Fi Rush arrives on PS5, one of the only other Xbox games that's gone multi-platform. We already have Pentiment, and Sea of Thieves is mentioned for later in the year. But thoughts on the old Hi-Fi Rush?
You know, well, I'm going to completely bypass that question and just talk about it generally, because you know how I realized I'm a sick console fanboy?
Yes.
Pentiment came to the PlayStation Store, and that is another Xbox exclusive that has made the jump, like Hi-Fi Rush, and I thought, maybe I'll buy it. I already own an Xbox. Already own it on Game Pass. I can get it on Game Pass. I don't know why I'm thinking this way. In Hi-Fi Rush, like, I've got both of these consoles, and the appeal of them coming to PlayStation is still so high, and I don't understand why when I can get them on Game Pass.
You want your trophies.
Maybe it's trophies. Maybe it's preferring the PlayStation controller, or just, you know, that being the primary ecosystem. I'm not going to buy Hi-Fi Rush because, to be honest, I didn't love it too much back in the day. Right. I like that it exists. I think it looks gorgeous, but for whatever reason, I just didn't. I don't know, man. Like, I go back and forward on that game so much. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes I think it's the best thing. Other times I'm like, eh, it's forgettable.
I did it in like two sittings. It's beautiful. I'm so glad it exists. I think it's a fascinating follow-up to The Evil Within when you think that it's Tango Gameworks who made it. I wanted a bit more from the music side of it. I got a bit sick of the one drum beat the whole way through, one time signature the whole way through. But I just one of those things, that, to me at least, I'm just glad it exists.
Yeah,
it does look absolutely gorgeous. It's worth it for the boss fights as well. There's some really good, inventive, especially visually, boss fights.
I will agree with that. Yeah. Oh, man, you know what? We just did a list on the best boss fights of the generation.
So far.
And some of those, so far. And some of those probably deserve to at least be honorable mentions. Those were sick, I will give you that.
They're
no
great.
Notes.
They didn't beat the 10 that we did pick for the best generational boss fight so far.
Probably not.
Let us know a favorite down in the comments below. That video will be coming out in the coming weeks.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, and I forget what we put number one, so we'll see how that goes. Alone in the Dark is out on March 20th, a much delayed game.
A much delayed game.
But I forget who's in this. It's like Vanessa Kirby.
It is.
And that dude from Stranger Things.
Is it Vanessa Kirby? It is. Yeah, I think you must be right about
that. I think
it is. Yeah, in David Harbour.
The whole idea of doing like this sort of A-list reboot of Alone in the Dark, the idea of being that you can sort of try and command that space again. I remember saying this last year, because Alone in the Dark was initially going to come out last year, or it's been talked about a lot, there's a lot of gameplay out there, that the Alone in the Dark series arguably deserves more spotlight. It's just that every few years we'll get a reboot. There was the PS3 one. There was one of them, which might have been the PS3 one, that went down really badly.
It was the 2009 one, yes. I want to say.
And it's like, there's something about, whether it's just the IP, the name Alone in the Dark feels like such a strong brand name that whoever the powers that be behind it just keep going, we need to make this work, and they just can't. And so we're going to be trying again.
That's it. I'm pretty sure it's THQ Nordic mm-hmm. who's publishing this, and I trust them way more than I'm pretty sure it was Sega, who used to own the IP, who did that 2009 game, and then did, I'm pretty sure, again. Can you remember Alone in the Dark Illumination?
Was that the multiplayer one?
I think it was multiplayer. It was it was kind of like it was similar to Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, mm-hmm, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And it was crap. That came around at the same time as Metal Gear Survive, and it was just one of those "what are you doing with this franchise" moments. How has this gotten so bad? Because I fully agree. You know, Alone in the Dark deserves more plaudits. I could not believe that the original came out 32 years ago.
That is insane.
1992. I'm pretty sure. Again, I'm pretty sure about a lot of things. It seems
you should people should look at the original Alone in the Dark footage. Or we might put it on screen if we have time or whatever. But the way the original Alone in the Dark looks is a long way away from how it looks now.
It is. I mean, it's a long way away from something like Silent Hill 1 or Resident Evil 1, which came out, 6-7 years afterwards? Mm-hmm. Maybe even less. Alone in the Dark, this reboot, really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. I think having the writer from Soma and Amnesia is excellent. Soma, I still think, is one of the best written horror games ever.
Yes.
The themes that thing grapples with, the plot twists, the atmosphere, amazing. I want to see some of that DNA in this. The cast looks incredible. I think, you know, it's more of a double A game, in my opinion, than a proper triple A, at least from what I've seen so far. Could be surprised. But I am hype on this. I was hyped for it last year, and I just hope it doesn't disappoint, because I think survival horror right now is in an excellent place.
Yes.
We've got Dead Space back. Resident Evil is back in a big way. Silent Hill's coming back. So why not Alone in the Dark? It's had the time to cook. And hopefully I've got a delicious, succulent meal that comes out the oven in March.
It makes sense for it to hopefully deliver. Like you said, Silent Hill is on the way back, but kind of stumbling. And maybe Alone in the Dark can be the bridge between the next big game.
Hey, it's foggy there, to be fair.
Well, yeah, they're getting there.
Hey.
They can't see what they're trying to aim for. Rise of the Ronin is out March 22nd, a game that I feel kind of fell down in people's expectations once they saw more gameplay of it.
Yeah.
I saw Team Ninja or Ninja Theory. I always forget them.
Me too.
One of the devs. Saying that the game can be played with up to four people. It's a four-player co-op experience, which I don't feel is how they were advertising it beforehand.
Ew.
But that would explain some of the arguably ropey gameplay sections they have put out there in regards to the way the animations work. If combat is more meant for multiple people all attacking at once, then I guess that's why there's not so much sync up on the attacks and defense and stuff.
Yeah, that would make more sense, because it does look a bit janky, doesn't it? Every trailer I've seen, I think...
I want to be more excited for it. I was so excited when they announced it.
Yeah.
And then the more I've seen of it, the more I've gone, oh, I don't know.
I know.
I don't know if this is it.
That's it. I want to be surprised by it. I'm not writing it off entirely, but I think I mentioned this when we did our big look at the entire year. It feels like I've played this game before in a better version of it, a prettier version of it, a tighter version of it, a more mechanically robust version of it. And I could be dead wrong, and I hope I am. But yeah, man, it's considering... that it was very exciting to see it announced, and the idea of it is so compelling. Just every time I see a trailer, I'm like, this could go either way. It reminds me a little bit, not necessarily in terms of the content, but a little bit of like Wolong Fallen Dynasty. And like, this is a game that is ropey and is sometimes good. And if it's on Game Pass, I would play it. But the fact that it's a PlayStation exclusive and is going to cost me money, maybe I'll wait till it comes in the sale, unless the reviews are really strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a sucker for good melee combat, especially anything that's in like an Eastern setting. Like, I love Ghost of Tsushima. I like the idea of this game. It's just that it's something where I'm going to just wait for the reviews or wait for launch. Maybe we'll get access to it early or something.
Yeah.
But I want it to be great. I like the idea of everything that they're putting together. There's also that game that's coming out. It's not Stellar Blade, but there's that other one, Phantom Blade.
Phantom Blade Zero, I think it's called.
That game seemed like it had really, really good melee combat, and I yearn for stuff like Sifu. I yearn for good tactile melee combat. And so hopefully it can come together.
I need to tell you a secret. There's a video I did last year, not just me, but we were doing this podcast thing, and we spoke about Rise of Ronin then, and for the entire part of that bit, I thought it was Phantom Blade Zero. I'm going to confess that now. I did it. If you go back and watch, in my brain, I'm thinking, this looks beautiful, looks excellent. I've turned around on it. I was thinking of the wrong game.
Well,
you know. Now I'm thinking of the right game, though. Phantom Blade, I am excited for.
Phantom Blade also looks awesome. On the same day, so Rise of the Ronin, March 22nd. Dragon's Dogma 2, also March 22nd. March 22nd is a big day.
It's packed, man.
There's another game after this that's also on March 22nd. But Dragon's Dogma 2, one of the most like hidden gems, cult classics, most recommended games of all time by your friend who loves JRPGs or RPGs in general.
This guy.
Which is this guy. I've never actually finished Dragon's Dogma, which is hilarious, after that recommendation. But that game is awesome. I feel like I've owned it about three different times. PS4, PS5, Switch. Like, I always go back to it. I do a little bit more. I love all the systems that make that game up.
Right.
And I'm hoping that Dragon's Dogma 2 maybe brings more of like a narrative edge to it. Because the whole story premise of a dragon has stole your heart is fun.
Yeah.
But it didn't get me all the way through that game. And I'm curious what 2 is going to be about.
It's very like sort of Kingdom Hearts-esque, that, isn't it?
A little bit. Plucks it out of you. Just grabs it.
Bang. Yeah. I never played the original, but right. I've heard so much from my friend who was into JRPG Scott Tilford, yes, that it was really, really good. And it's obviously got this massive sort of cult fan base that's developed over the past 10 years or however long it's been since the original came out. And I am hype for Dragon's Dogma 2. I don't even know why. There's just something about the world and it being Capcom, who at the minute is absolutely goated in the amount of quality products and games they've been putting out. Mm-hmm. I just think it has all the ingredients of something that will get me to buy day one. And honestly, part of me is even looking more... I'm looking forward to it a little bit more than I am Final Fantasy, can't get my words out, Final Fantasy Rebirth. Honestly, I don't know why.
Well, the combat is way chunkier. Like, there's a lot more like heft and weight to the Dragon's Dogma combat. Yeah. Like, Final Fantasy Rebirth's combat is a lot more acrobatic and you're a lot more flashy kind of thing. But there's something about Dragon's Dogma, and the original had this as well, where like every class did feel so distinct. And it's like, if you're pairing up with people, it's such a great co-op game. Like, it has Shadow of the Colossus mechanics where you can climb on bigger creatures and take them down. There's limb damage and like riding like a griffin up into the sky and then managing to take it out the sky so everyone can pile on or whatever. Like, there's a lot of cool dynamic interactions with this, and it's something that Helldivers 2 has reminded the world they need.
Right.
And I think it's a good way for co-op tactics to come together.
I think RPGs, I don't know if you would agree, but RPGs now feel like they're having a real moment. You know, after Baldur's Gate coming into Final Fantasy, now you've got Dragon's Dogma, we've got Avowed coming up, we had Starfield last year. Like, single player big chunky RPGs, no matter the setting, seem to be in right now, and they seem to be selling incredibly well. I saw that Baldur's actually passed 10 million copies just the other day.
Yeah.
And there's a real sort of fan, I don't know, just demand for them right now. So I hope Dragon's Dogma 2 hits that same nerve.
Yeah, it feels like a fan-fueled project. Like, Dragon's Dogma 1 was like 2011 or something. It's quite an older game, but it always had so much going for it. Same day, March 22nd, Princess Peach Showtime. Beyond time that we've got a decent Princess Peach game on home consoles.
Absolutely, and I mean, this is more of a you game than me, Scott, but if there's one Nintendo Switch game I will buy this year, I think it'll be this. I think it looks quite good.
I kind of wish it was more of a 3D action platformer. I wish it played a bit more like the most recent Kirby, or just whatever, some sort of like semi-open world type thing where I can explore full 3D planes. I'm less excited about another 2D action platformer, as much as I love that genre. It hasn't really blown me away. I kind of wanted a bit more from Princess Peach's abilities than just another costume swapping mechanic, because we've got that in Kirby. It just feels like a go-to thing. Like, Mario started doing a lot more of that in Mario Odyssey. And I like the idea of finally giving Princess Peach her literal spotlight.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the game will be charming as hell, but I was hoping for a bit more than what seems like quite an easy genre to just do and be like, we're going to do another one of them, but this time it's Princess Peach.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. You know, it's a safe bet, isn't it? And in a stopgap year, I think we can officially crown 2024 as a stopgap year for the big three of Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. It's a good... For me, a good final hurrah for the Switch 1 until we presumably get some next-gen feeling big major titles for Switch 2 next year.
As we're recording this, it's a few hours before the Pokemon Presents thing, so there's a chance that the next main Pokemon gets announced, but I think at this stage, in the stopgap, I think the stopgap stuff is real across the board. I think Nintendo are just going to wait out another year and do the Switch 2 next year, which makes me think that the next main Pokemon or something like that will be pushed until at least next year.
What else, like, do they... Do you... Do we have anything else officially announced for the rest of this year in terms of
big not with dates
releases? Not with dates.
Nah,
right,
okay. It's like you've got like Metro Prime 4 is still out there.
Yeah.
Since 2017 at this point. There's like rumors of a new Star Fox. There's a new Donkey Kong is apparently almost ready to go, which is more like a Donkey Kong 64. There's things out there, but like Nintendo is so cagey. Like they'll drop it when they're ready, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Final game in March is Open Roads, a game that was delayed from February into March, which is starring Kerry Russell and Caitlin Dever. I forget. I think it's the Fulbright company making this.
Yes.
The old Gone Home people.
Yes.
But it seems to be like a road trip style game where you play as like a mother-daughter combo.
Yeah.
I've deliberately not looked too much into this. I just trust the people who are in it and the people putting it together.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think we actually talked about this when we did the February look forward because it got delayed last minute and it got pushed to the end of March.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one for a while. I think the art style looks really cool, like you said. The actresses involved, I love the stuff that they've been in, and I hope this is a nice story-driven indie. And I'm really into cars at this moment in time, Scott Tilford, for whatever reason.
He's Pacific driving.
I think it's Arctic Monkeys did this to me when they released the album The Car, and I started romanticizing the idea of the car and being on the road and
doing
road trips. I don't even drive, but
you
I
should
like the idea of it.
Watch Road Trip and listen to Gary Newman.
I might do just that.
It's maybe the perfect combo.
Hey, what if I do both of those things on different screens and headphones while playing Pacific Drive, which I'm also playing right now, which rules, by the way.
Build a cardboard box, car rig, and live your best life.
Man, I've got GD7 on VR2 because that was a free update. So I might, instead of buying a racing wheel, because one, I don't have the money, two, my flat's too small, three, my partner would kill me, I might just make a cardboard box version, put my DualSense in there, get my VR on and pretend I'm in like a little tin can.
Someone who fully indulged in Nintendo cardboard VR, I can only recommend that enough.
Well, I'm always interested by this. We talked about Pacific Drive the other day, right, which I was loving. As someone who does drive, you know, a lot, do you even want to play a driving game? I feel like I do it enough in real life. Why would I want to relax? In Pacific Drive, for instance, and I know we're talking about open roads, but I'm going on a big tangent here. Like, there, you have to do everything manually.
Yes.
Like, you're turning the key.
When you described that, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, you're pulling the clutch. You know, you're putting the little light on. You're putting the headlights on. You're pulling the windscreen wipers down. Mm-hmm. You're doing everything manually. And I thought, if I drove every day, I wouldn't want to come back and then do this meticulous driving in real life in video games.
For me, it's definitely what a driving game gives me that I can't do in real life. That's why I love arcade games. Like, arcade racing games. Like, I love Burnout, Split Second. Like, even that Asphalt series I've started getting into a little bit.
Nice.
Over on mobile. But it depends what it serves the game. Pacific Drive seems like the full package, though.
Yeah.
So that's most of the games for March. Let us know your favorites down in the comments below, and we'll catch you very soon.
See ya.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.